Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today I'm really excited about today's show. We have author Eric Rankin, who wrote The Aquarians, 2012, A New Era Begins. And it's about one of my favorite subjects, dolphin, and the wisdom and love and compassion that dolphins give us. So, Eric, God bless you for being here, and thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities.
Well, God bless you, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. This was a great book, and I really, it reminded me of the very popular book that was also a spiritual adventure that I read probably like 15, 17 years ago, The Celestine Prophecy, and it was like it was very popular, and this took me in the same direction of a spiritual, you know, fantasy adventure awakening without ever leaving my home. So I really valued the ease and the escapism that I was able to feel and go to in your book. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I can't have a better compliment than being compared to the Celestine Prophecy. And a few people, a few reviewers on Amazon have, and now all I need is about, 10% of the people that bought that book to buy mine, and we're in good shape.
Oh, well, I tell you, it's a great book, and I think anybody who's on, the spiritual path would really enjoy this, especially, it's a great book for, being at the beach and hanging out and reading. I mean, it really takes you somewhere, and I want to talk about this because this is very timely for me. I had an incredible encounter in May, and it was before I had even read your book, and it was after I had scheduled you for my show. So, the timing of everything is very, very much in sync here. But let's talk a little bit first about you've traveled all around swimming with dolphin and experiencing dolphin, and what brought the book to fruition for you in regard to the story and all of that?
Yeah, it all came together sort of synchronistically for me. I grew up in the yachting industry, much like the lead character in the story, in the Newport Beach area, and I was just out on the water all the time doing sea trials or demonstration rides or just boating for my own pleasure and encountering dolphins all the time. Just such a common occurrence. And if you kind of tune in to where they're going and how fast they're swimming and everything else, it's very easy to hang with them for quite a while. And
right.
I just got the feeling that, man, they really want to be around you. They're not just swimming in front of you on the bow wave. They want to kind of look you in the eye. They turn sideways. And I got to the point where I would move ahead of the pod, the way that the whatever pod I was looking at in the direction they were going, stop the boat, slither into the water with my mask and fins, and just wait and see if they came to me. And so often they did. And the encounters that I had just off the local waters here in Southern California were incredible, and it put me on this path of learning more about dolphins, wanting to encounter other dolphins around the world, and it just opened up my world from being sort of the shallow, thing obsessed, materialistic guy, kind of like in the story. I was sort of on that path in the yachting industry. You can imagine the people you're selling boats to and cavorting with. And it really did. It was kind of the thing that put me on my path that is much more spiritual and open to the divine nature of things.
Well, that's incredible because as you're telling your story, I'm thinking, wow, the similarities in, you're on the Pacific coast, I'm on the Atlantic coast, and I, too, was raised as a boater. And my father was, captain of the Coast Guard. So he had lived on a boat at 17 years old, and there was six children, and I was the youngest. And so from, 6 weeks old, I was put in a bassinet and tied to the toilet paper hole roller in the bathroom of our boat for the waves rocking back and forth. So I grew up, we had to know how to maneuver, from 36 to 56 foot boat by the age of 10. And my dad was not very gentle in directing us. He was definitely helm of the captain realm. And, you know, when he said jump, we said how high. So,
yeah.
You know, it was definitely, but I had also encountered the dolphin in Florida, and we would just, he would anchor like a mile offshore, and we would dive in just being kids. And this was before the whole awakening of the dolphin intelligence, enlightenment, awareness happened. So I grew up, you know, having a love and respect for dolphin. But I'm just going to share a little story briefly, because I find myself in this shift right now, and you're part of this shift because you've entered my life now, and this book has entered my life, all timely. But I think we scheduled your show back in March, right? It was like, it was several months ago. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in March, you know, I didn't really know that your book was about dolphin. In May, I was taking a walk. I take a walk either around my river, which is outside my door, or the beach, which is down the street. And I started off at the beach and decided, no, there's too many people here, really want some solitude. I'm going to go take a walk on the river. And instead of, I had written about this online, and it was, because it was just really cathartic for me. So instead of taking my normal route to the right on the river bend, I decided to go left. And as I'm walking, I thought, huh, I wonder if I'll see my little dolphin pod playing out there, because there's a little family out in the river. And as I'm walking, I see this crowd developing at this one end of an island. And as I'm walking on the opposite end of the island, I pass this water, the water side. And a big splash happens to my left. And I look, and normally I would just keep walking, but I was drawn to the ripples. So I'm looking in the water like a crazy person, looking into nothing, just this ripples in the water. And this dolphin comes right out of the water and locks eyes with mine. So I think, well, that's pretty darn cool. And I'm now mesmerized into watching the water. So this crowd is developing about a quarter of a mile away from me to the right. And I'm all alone on the left at the other end of the island. And she comes up again, and she starts like flopping uncontrollably. Well, she comes up a third time, and I realize she's giving birth as I see four fins coming from her rear. As I look into the water of the lake, of the river, there's a circle of dolphin surrounding her, and I counted 15, but there could have been more. They're all upright. They're all in a perfect circle. She's in the middle of the circle of dolphin, and she gives birth right in front of me.
Wow.
It was the most incredible experience, probably, you know, as incredible as giving birth to my own four children. So, but this was like a nature wild adventure for me. It definitely
yeah.
changed me. My life hasn't been the same since that episode. And I'm kind of like at alert right now. So I'm looking at life as, okay, where are we going? And then I read your book, which is all about 2012, Dolphin Intelligence and Love, Compassion, all about this change of the Mayan calendar. So let's talk about this. This is like, and of course 1111 has followed me since I was a kid. So I'm reading your book and I'm thinking, wow, he's really a soul brother.
So you didn't know that either. That you probably didn't know that my book was about 1111 when we even did that.
No, I picked up your book.
I
picked up your book in June because I like to read my books current to when I'm doing the show. So I picked up your book in June. I see the two dolphins on it, and I think, okay, this is really cool because I'm also on the cusp of Aquarius and Pisces. So I actually resonate really strong with Aquarian people. So I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, okay, it's called The Aquarians, 2012, New Era Begins, two dolphins on the front. I'm going through some sort of shift here. And here we are, Eric.
Wow, that is so awesome. And I'll tell you, there's some things that I love about your story. First off, the thing that really struck with me is that it sounded like a non-detail in the details, but you turned left instead of right.
Yes.
There's so much power in these little decisions that we make, and we follow our intuition, that there is something sort of calling us, but we have to do our part listening to those subtle tones. And you mentioned the Celestine prophecy. It was a lot about that you would follow this path. It almost like things would, if I remember it right, you know, it would almost like this path would illuminate slightly. That's how you knew which way to go in your vision, sort of in your third eye vision.
Ah.
And you followed that. You just followed this intuitive gut. You probably didn't even seem like much of a decision as you were making it. And yet the payoff was just a huge, amazing thing that so few people ever get to witness, certainly not in the wild. I mean, that would put you in the top 0.00%.
Well, and the bizarrity is it's Little Indian River Lagoon, you know, here in Vero Beach, which, you know, on one side, I'm on this island called Memorial Island that's dedicated to all veterans. That's where I'm walking. And on the other side of the bank are homes. So it's not like it's completely pristine and untouched by, you know, human hands. We have a marina a quarter of a mile down the river. So it's like these dolphin were here. And honestly, I had started my walk to do a beach walk, but I was in my hermit mode and really didn't want to encounter a lot of people. And there were too many people at the beach. So I said, okay, I'll go to the river. And I always go to the right and went to the left. So the synchronicity. And you know, I do intuition. That's my work. So, you know, I do it for others unconsciously. When it comes to myself, I'm a little bit more stubborn. So, you know, all these choices and decisions definitely were guiding me. And, you know, I didn't know how rare having witnessed a birth, a live birth of a dolphin was until I started to talk about it. And it was, you know, it's still, as I'm talking about it, I've got the vibrations and the hair standing up on the back of my neck and a little resonating going on. So it's definitely been an exploring spiritual encounter, and there's no coincidence. I really think that anyone reading your book is going to walk away feeling a sense of awe and awakening within themselves, because these dolphin are here. They're here to give us, you know, this compassion and this love and this awakening on such an unconscious, unspoken level. And the way you've provided this story is such an easy, open read for anyone to get the message. And I really value how much detail you put in here in regard to, you know, the imagery and how they are, you know, transferring the message from one dolphin to another. And, you know, it's just, let's get into a little bit about, you know, how this, because this is definitely divinely inspired. I mean, you can tell by reading this that you were divinely inspired by the information that came through. Where did you, you have all this information that comes through in regard to how this, you know, the characters in the book, you know, we're measuring the sonar and the intelligence and the wisdom from the dolphin. Was this something you explored on your own?
Well, I kind of modeled a lot of that discovery and stuff from a real dolphin research marine biologist back in the 50s, Dr. John Lilly, 50s and 60s. It's amazing, you know, people have been compelled by dolphins, want to know more about dolphins. Dolphins have been in lots of ancient art from, you know, going back to Minoan society and Romans and everything else. Dolphins were these almost mythical creatures, but of course literal as well. And yet we didn't know very much about them going all the way up to the 1950s. And John Lilly comes on the scene, and he's a sort of a thinker outside the box. And the more he thought about them in his out-of-the-box place, the more almost obsessed he became with what these creatures are. If you take a 200-pound dolphin, just a couple of quick facts you learned in the book, but 200-pound dolphin will have a larger brain than a 200-pound human. A dolphin has in their pectoral fins these five-fingered hands that, you know, hark back to the days when they walked on land and 40, 45 million years ago went back to the oceans. That seemed very compelling to him. He anesthetized a completely healthy dolphin to do some blood work, and the dolphin immediately died. And the light bulb went off on his head that, oh, my gosh, every single breath a dolphin must take is a conscious breath. And he just put all these pictures together in all these facts, and he goes, these are just like an alien life form to us. And working with him the way he did – He didn't go down the science route that just isolates things and says, okay, maybe they can do one thing and we'll study very slowly. He imagined this, and you can't help it. If you get in the water with them, you will see an intelligence that is really hard to describe. That they initiate gameplay. They are trying to elicit reactions out of you. They want to approach you and share things with you. They'll go get something and bring it to you and show you things. So you realize right away, this is not just your average everyday animal that usually is just spooked at the sight of you and runs away.
Right.
These are creatures that not only are interested in you, they want to engage you. And
there's
so many stories of not just engagement, but even healing or help or, you know, the little anecdote that I put in the beginning of my book where a dolphin helps an autistic child, that was virtually a verbatim account that happened in Florida down at Dolphin Research Center probably 20 years ago. And this dolphin, dolphins, because of their echolocation, we know that it's very easy to find out that dolphins emit pulses up to 60, 65, 70,000 hertz, which is about double what an ultrasound machine does when we're looking inside the womb of a pregnant woman. And you see a pretty good image of a baby there. Double that range capacity and imagine the clarity of a dolphin firing into another form, another dolphin, a human being, looking at a fish, and seeing this three-dimensional view of the inside of them. They're literally transparent to each other, which is a huge... I said it subtly in the book. I say a lot of things subtly in the book, but that they are transparent to one another is a huge aspect, I think, to me, because I keep hearing this word as we shift into the Aquarian Age, that a huge change we will make personally is we will choose to become more transparent. We won't do it in the same way that dolphins are capable of blasting each other with these ultrasonic pulses, but you can definitely choose how much you're going to hide of yourself versus how much you're going to share all the time. And that would be
right.
Living transparently, which would be much more dolphin-like without using airy fairy language and saying it's
right.
ESP or anything like that. It's conscious, willful sharing of your real self with others.
Right, and this is, you know, as we do evolve, as we are coming into this, this greater awakening on a collective consciousness, we are seeing where if you're not living your truth, if you're not walking in integrity and authenticity, you're going to get slammed. And, the reality is, you know, to be true to yourself, and in being true to yourself, there's, you know, everything's going to be revealed in its truth to you. So there's going to be less deception that you even encounter in the world because of your own truth. And
right.
And this is something that, you know, I really felt was a really, very, very gently stated message throughout your book is, you know, living in truth and authenticity. And as we are awakening, you know, these eclipses that are also mentioned, you know, in the book as far as what we've been going through since last December of 2011 and that major eclipse, there's been so much shift even in the last 7 months that I've seen on the planet in people. And so I can only envision what we are encountering coming into December 2012 in our own awakening. And I love how you aren't taking the 2012, hell and damnation and the world's going to end. Because you're looking at it as, and you're providing the insight and the wisdom for the readers, that this is an opening of our consciousness. This is an opening of our awareness and our compassion and our love and really tapping into that higher sense of who we are. And that message in the book is, you know, it's priceless. So, you know, the way you tell your story, it takes you in so many different ways because you can't just read the story. It's written on a fictional level, but there's so much truth to it, you know? You have so much resonance and truth of wisdom and knowledge that comes in, even though it's written as a story. And I really like that because that's going to resonate to everyone. It's not going to be just something that's scientific information that you obtain. You get knowledge without realizing it, is my point. You know, it's like you're getting something even if you're just reading it as a story.
Well, thank you so much. I you could not give better compliments than everything you've said, because my intention from the get-go, I mean, I literally had a little note over my head as I was writing it in my office. I was writing it is, you know, not too spacey, new agey for mainstream readers, but also not too watered down for people that have already opened and awakened, you know, that it would resonate
right.
with them. And that's a much harder line to walk than
yeah.
I thought it would be.
Right.
And to have
it
sort of flow, and to have it flow is a, you know, it's a short book. It's sort of an easy breezy read. And I also didn't want to over minister. Some people are feeling, you know, every once in a while it's like, wow, gosh, I just wanted more. And it's like, well, the more is from you. You know, I drop
yeah.
these little nuggets of thought, and you talk about sort of this divine wisdom are often voiced through the female lead character in the story, because I do think a big part of this shift is really kind of moving and embracing that divine feminine again. So the
right.
strong character is Rebecca, this woman in the story. And
right.
Just having it resonate with men, women, new agers, not new agers, mainstreamers, all those things, and be a light read, but just drop these little pearls where the reader can take with it. It's, I don't over, you know, I don't hit you on the head and say you must believe something. It's just these little things that consider this almost, you know.
Right.
And you take it from there. And that was fun for me to kind of drop those without overdoing it.
Well, you did it masterfully, because it was really, it was well done in a way, like you said, you're not hitting the reader over the head with pay attention, read this, read this, read this. You're nudging them. And
yeah.
and nudging is always a great, you know, a great lead in regard to any of our awakenings or any of our truth or any of our needing to know. But, you know, there's no coincidence that those who are seeking, or those who are opening their hearts and their souls to a greater compassion within themselves and the planet, also seem to be resonating to dolphin wisdom, love, knowledge, you know, and a lot of it. I had, I'm just, you know, really, I've been altered since the experience, and I've really been honoring my hermit. So it's been a very inward journey for me since this experience has happened. And so this is my first kind of taste of talking with somebody about it openly. But what you have provided, I take it that you are somewhat Ryan then in the story, as Ryan and Rebecca are kind of the lead characters in your book. You have a lot of wonderful dynamics in your characters in the book, and I really like the personalities you expressed on all of them. But the Ryan character was the one who really came from, you know, a life of, you know, kind of like not really needing to be touched by anything harsh. He was kind of living a life of luxury, and he chose to challenge himself. And so I really, really respected the character that he played, and also Rebecca, who was still finding herself in college and then was drawn because of the autistic child that she saw resonating in the Keys with the doctor. So there was a whole lot of parallels that I saw with the characters in recognizing their own truth and coming into their own purpose. And like I started to get off on a rampage here, but we have a lot of people really resonating with dolphin love and dolphin wisdom. And you hear a lot about the dolphin intelligence, but you don't hear so much, and I think it's because we don't want to make it so airy-fairy as a culture. We don't want to, but you don't hear so much about the dolphin compassion, healing, love that I think is really the true message. You know, sure, they may be more intelligent than our humans or us as humans, or they may have some key there of intelligence, but it's really that unconditional love. What I really saw was how unconditional this pod was of protecting this mother giving birth. You know, I mean, it's almost like, okay, given birth, we're there for you, you know? And it's like, okay, so it really made me resonate with who's my pod, you know? Where's my pod? Where's my soul pod? Where's my support system? And that's really where it took me in regard to a whole nother dynamic of understanding how much love they have for one another. And if we can just harness that love as humans for one another and support each other in our journeys, in our individual paths, what a life-changing world this would be.
Yeah. And that's what I've tried to do. There's lots of points you've made that I hope I can touch on. But what I've tried to do was, you know, rather than say dolphins are going to talk to us or we're going to become dolphins or, you know, whatever, is to make it believable is the first thing is that what dolphins are modeling. You know, as a species, if you stand back and just look at the modeling, which you just touched on beautifully, of how they live, that they show lots of compassion for each other, and that we can become more dolphin-like. I'm not saying we become dolphins or this new species or anything like that, but that we can take some things that we see from studying their behavior and go, that really seems healthy and like a great thing. You talked about, well, first thing you said, in your personal journey, and I think is a huge part of this Aquarian shift we're living through right now, is going within. And I wanted to touch on that because I think that is so huge, is that all arrows are kind of pointing back at you, and rather than you going out and just spreading yourself thin, looking at all these different directions and all this affirmation from all these different ways, the real shift is about going within. And you just expressed it so beautifully that I wanted to touch on that, that if there's something that I wanted people to kind of take from this book, is like, where do I go? What do I do? Where do I run if the world gets really scary and I'm out of money? You go within. I mean, that's the place that you can generate the peace, the calmness, the everything you need, you have. You just need to turn the mirror back in all ways possible and work on yourself. And then when you are just at your best, running your smoothest, your greatest, your most divine, graceful place, that's when you will have your best impact on the people around you, that they will feel your best. They will feel that you're just in this place of love and compassion and all these things that dolphins do seem to model. You'll be in that place, and they'll feel it. That's the awesome other thing, that dolphins living transparently, they can sense if those around them are stressed or, you know, what, because of, they can see heart rate, they can see stress, and they can see all these things. They can see if you were starving. We can't see inside each other like that, but we can feel it, you know, just right away. You can feel if it's safe to be around someone or talk a certain way around someone. That's choosing, that they chose this transparency. And you're right, just a small shift within each of us in the way that we live and encounter other people will equal a huge paradigm shift on the macro level. What we do on the micro level will manifest in the macro level. And I truly believe that we're just living in this phase. People always ask me, what do you think is going to happen on the, you know, the day of the end of the Mayan calendar? And it's like, it's not the day. We are already in this shift. I mean, people talking about the age of Aquarius back in the 60s, they were already feeling this. I think this whole Aquarian ideology is what, you know, breeded that hippie culture that asked for something else rather than just status quo. And it was an experiment, and it had its good points and its bad points. But, you know, writing a song about the age of Aquarius and talking about this peace and love and all these things in a way that really did stick. I mean, we haven't forgotten about what those the mission that those people felt they were on. And I think it is just really, really holding. And we are being, and it's not like the end of the, I don't want to say that I don't think the end of the world is not coming. The end of a certain type of our reality is coming. It is coming from many directions, from the destabilization of our economy, you know, from population growth. We are forced to, like, in climate change, we are forced to sort of reassess who we are, how we live on this planet, and this just culture of more and more and more, buy stuff you don't need with money you don't have, to show off to people you don't care about. All of that needs to really change to be us living our true, authentic realities, human beings, the way we were supposed to be living, I believe.
Oh, yeah. And beautifully said, Eric, beautifully said, because, you know, in all of this, it really comes down to self-love. And in self-love, we're able to generate love to others. And I really believe if it can be summed up simply, that's what it comes down to, because there's so much, even with, you know, what we see on our physical world, in our economy, in our earth changes, in our lives, that's, you know, you've got people freaking out left and right. And really what it comes down to is, okay, let's just, like you said, go within. We must really trust ourselves. And unfortunately and fortunately, we have wonderful outlets for that to help us, to guide us, to encourage us, to support us. And then we have a whole lot of flake. And, you know, there's a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon because of the awakening to, you know, look at me, come to me, you know, do this, do that, and it's very ego-based. And so it's, you know, on that level, I like to say my favorite color is gray, but on that level, there's a lot of black and white, and there's a lot of really tuning into what resonates with you, because too many people are giving their power away to too many people, and it really needs to come into the soul heart of who you are, because in that soul heart is God, and that's our connection to our collective consciousness, and it's our connection to God as one in unity, and it also helps define our individuality as spiritual beings in a human form. And so, you know, here we are learning from these massive creatures that do not have a you know, a tone or language per se that we, you know, as a German, Irish, you know, or English or Spanish, or, you know, there's no dialect, there's no volume, but there's this
no border
language. Yes. Yes. And yet they're speaking to us. And so it's a matter of opening up not the mind to interpret, but the heart to interpret. And so that's really the wisdom, is tuning back into ourselves, tuning back into our hearts, tuning back into how we feel, and how we can be more compassionate to fellow man, to one another, and firstly to ourselves. So, you know, there's all this awakening that's going on, and yet the power still resides within our heart and ourselves.
Right.
And I loved, you know, that some statement that you said, it's tuning back to ourselves, you know. If we can just realize that it's not out there, you know, it's not that one person or that one group or that one way of meditating or that one way of praying or that one religion or belief. It's what resonates within ourselves. And, you know, there's no falsity. When we can really be true to trusting ourselves, that's our divinity, and that's how we evolve. But the wisdom that you've provided in this book, and because you really have some great scientific aspects as well as a great story, so it's like you get really hit from all different angles in reading your story. It's a great book. It's like it takes my mind on the analytical, it takes my mind on the intuitive, it takes my mind my heart into my heart. Now, how did your life change in writing the book? Let's talk about that a little bit, because I'm sure you went through a journey.
Yeah, and I'm still on it. I'm telling you, the journey does, it's a step-by-step path. You know, you don't think I'm making this change and you know, automatically my life is just changed and it's something else. My journey has been a path step-by-step, but man, what a divergent path it's been from where I thought I was headed, you know, the business world, the yachting world, all that stuff, and where I am now and the things I talk about and the people I hang with just could not be more different. So talk about just being open to what the universe provides and going with it, recognizing those synchronicities and, you know, all those coincidences and as these affirmations. And that's what happened to me, just step by step. And there's been so many, it sounds like it's almost a movie in itself, from becoming this 11-11 aware person, meeting other people that were like that, to opening up to the dolphin story and the science, like you said, that is just so compelling about dolphins. And keeping your heart in on the conversation, I think, is just the huge part of it, is that your mind is not disengaged when your heart becomes engaged. And so many people, they do that just either or. They're very polarized. when they're in their heart space, they're in their heart space, and that's all they give, and their mind is just, like, off. Or they're in their mind space, and their heart's kind of shut down for a while because they're in their mind space, and they don't think the two blend. And we are, if anything we are as human beings that makes us unique is we are this combination of heart and mind. So you could call it consciousness or conscience or something, but that we are these mindful, heartful creatures, and it's such a miraculous combination, this chemistry of how we think and feel all at the same time, and we seem to have kind of avoided it. It's either weak, you know, to be too heart-connected or something like that, and the message, I think, has always been to blend them. And you always say something I want to touch back on. You talked about people, you know, not feeling worthy and that they're looking outward of themselves and finding this almost like a guru or a shaman to latch onto or a group. And I do think that's another huge fence post in this Aquarian shift is you stop looking for that. You recognize the shaman within, the guru within. You don't need to feel unworthy. I think for some reason, we feel unworthy ourselves of getting this information from on high and putting mm-hmm. it to use in our life. We feel that it has to be filtered through someone else. And that, mm-hmm. of course, seems to be like a Jesus model or a Gandhi model or a Buddha model. And it's not that those people did not just give us awesome wisdom to work with, but I think so often they would have said, and this is within you as well. You know, if you choose to access this, it's there. You can do these things. You can think these thoughts. And I just think that this Aquarian moment, this shift into this next 2,000 years will be so much more about that. No longer looking for outside of yourself for the answer. You recognize that it's within you. So I wanted to touch back on that. And then the science you talk about in the way the dolphins, the point you probably haven't made in my book is how they communicate. And that is a little bit of a stretch, the way that they potentially might send holographic images to each other. That's the mm-hmm. one little stretch I took into imagination. But even that is not the stretch that some people might think it is. There are scientists definitely believe that is. I read it in the book as fact that that's how dolphins do communicate with each other, with these picture languages that they can send to each other. And that hasn't been proven yet, but definitely seems to be a genuine possibility. They've done these types of experiments and tests with dolphins, two different isolated dolphins exposed to different objects and seem to know what each other are talking about without seeing it. So it's like it definitely is in the realm of possibility, even that aspect in the story. So I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Oh, I think it's a very viable reality because, you know, when you're dealing with sonar and you're dealing with, you know, sound, there's so much depth within that sound. And so, you know, as it was addressed in the book, you know, they could have duplicated the sounds using digital computer or, you know, sounds from a computer. But Ryan in the story chose not to. He didn't want to fake that. You know, because how do you know what that sound means? You know, how do you know what that squawk or that...
Just mimicking a sound is, it is maybe a small step towards communication, but, you know, a tiny baby step. When if you can see a picture, we say a picture is worth 1,000 words, you know, a mm-hmm. dolphin could tell a narrative with pictures and we would very likely understand it.
Right. I thought you really handled that very well in the story of, because it was... There has to be the way that this, you know, the way that this pod, you know, in the experience I encountered, what I saw was it was a perfect circle of dolphin surrounding the mother dolphin in the center
That's
of the
amazing.
Circle. I mean, it was a perfect circle, and they were upright with the noses up towards the sky. So it was like, you know, how could they not communicate? I mean, they had to have communicated to let everyone in the pod know, hey, you know, Sally's giving birth right now.
You know? Let's do our thing.
Let's join us.
Yeah. And it could be it could even be ceremonial. I mean, think of what you described in a circle around each other. Obviously not necessary to be a perfect circle if they are protecting each other or they're – there's a lot of midwifery that goes on with dolphins, that the dolphin who's giving birth, it could very likely be another dolphin that floats the baby up to the surface to take its first breath. There's a lot of that going on, but being in a perfect circle makes you think of ceremony, you know, ancient ceremony,
right.
That this is an important event, I mean, a huge event in any conscious, sentient creature's life, and here are these dolphins around there just acknowledging it in this, what we would call a ceremonial, you know, geometry, this perfect circle. So
right,
who knows?
Right.
I mean, it, who knows what really goes on with dolphins, but I, my theory, one of them is if an alien life form that's way more advanced than us comes and does a field report on our planet, they would very likely say there's two highly evolved, highly intelligent species. One of them, you know, builds things and seems to be, you know, obsessed with conflict and war, and in 2,000 years has kind of used up all these resources. And there's this other that has managed to live in balance on this planet for 40 million years. I mean, you think
right.
how we've lived is so brief, 40 million years looking like they look like, living in harmony, living in balance, living in sustainability, not building things, not owning things, not changing the face of what the planet looks like. I mean, I would think that the field report would say the more successful of the two species was not us.
Right, and who do you want to hang with, you know? I mean,
yeah,
seriously,
who would you choose to hang with? Yeah, these people that are just fighting over the most ridiculous little things, these borders and these ideologies and religions, these things that they've manufactured to fight over, and just like, oh, it's like we have to learn something from the dolphins or we really will become extinct. We will willfully extinct ourselves, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, what it takes for me is it steps out of this look at me, egotistical, competitive realm of what we've been conditioned to be as human beings, and takes us back into the simplicity of living as supportive spiritual hearts. You know, it's like if we could all just, you know, come from a place of supporting one another instead of competing with one another, what a world this would be, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's...
I think
it's
going to happen.
I do, too, because I think, you know, what has happened for me is I joke about this, but it's actually, you know, it's really true for where I'm at right now. But since this experience, I have really been very selective of who I want to vibe with and who I want to hang with, because it's like it's almost like, you know, I realized, you know, I have been really blessed with wonderful people in my life. But I've also realized some caustic energies since this has happened. And it's really, instead of bowing down and giving my power away to that, I've just kind of like observed. And so it's really changed the dynamics of where my priorities lie in regard to where I want to vibe with and where I want to hang. And,
absolutely.
You know, spending more time by the water is definitely, you know, kind of like my church. So it's, you know, I really liked that there was a phrase in the book that somebody said, I believe you said it was Jimmy Buffett in the book, that there was a statement Jimmy Buffett said he was raised Catholic, but now the water is his religion. And I resonate deeply with that.
And think of it.
Yeah, it is. It's because there's such a resonance of peace that, you know, one thing that I always appreciated as a kid, we were, you know, Sundays were boating day. I mean, we would get up and we would get on the boat and that was it, all day Sunday. So my mom, being a Catholic, had to adjust her schedule to my dad, who believed in UFOs. So we would do Catholic Mass on Saturday night when they started that. And Sunday we would be on the boat. Well, I got a lot more out of being on the boat on Sunday and resonating with nature than I ever got, you know, sitting in church reciting prayers and they're not dissing on the organized religion, but for me personally, it was my church. So,
right.
You know, interesting. I mean, you know, like you said, you dove off the boat. You know, I dove off the boat. The dolphins would just be hanging there. This was way before swimming with the dolphins was popular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this was back in the 70s when I'm growing up. And it was like way before, you know, swimming with the dolphins, going to the Keys and paying hundreds of dollars to go swim with the dolphins ever became like the cool thing to do. So,
right.
You know, and I've also talked to a scientist who read my blog when I was kind of dumbfounded by the experience, and he believes that dolphins are not going to be here forever, that they're here to teach us something, and he studies dolphin, and he said that he doesn't believe they're going to be here forever, that they're here to teach us something, either we get it or we don't. And,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of a wake-up call in itself, because here's these incredible creatures that have lived, like you said, what, 40 million years?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think that's right up there with the cockroach, you know, and I mean,
the big difference is that they are conscious, self-aware creatures. That's the big difference. There's a lot of animals that have been around for a long time. You know, lizards and stuff are direct descendants of the dinosaurs and things. But dolphins are these self-aware, sentient beings, which makes them very, and warm-blooded, air-breathing mammals like us. And think of the world history that they've seen. They've seen the evolvement of human being. The point I make in the story is, you know, as long as a creature has gone swimming, our predecessors, our forefathers, in whatever shape they looked like, as long as they went in the water and there was a dolphin there to see them, they know from the inside out what that humanoid looked like and could follow our evolution and see it. And I'm sure we're fascinating to them that they've been in this 40 million years, you know, that 10,000 years ago they see this race of upright, air-breathing people living on land, you know, and they see our coastline and see what we've done in a very short amount of time compared to their timeline. And like, look at those people, just wacky, look at what they're doing now, you know, almost. And still nothing but still coming up to us, still wanting to approach us, engage us, share, model, you know, their behavior with us. And it's really up to us to be in a place to receive it or not. And I do believe that in this new paradigm shift reality that we're going to be living in, there still will be haves and have-nots. You sort of alluded to it a little bit, but it won't be material haves and have-nots. It will be the people that have awakened, and I don't mean that from an ego place, but you will know that they're awakened because they're living at peace within themselves. They might not have, it has nothing to do with how much they will have or own or be able to show off. It will be how at peace they are with themselves, how much they can serve others, how there they are for themselves and others. And those will be the haves, the people that just have awakened to this ideology, regardless of what they own. And the have-nots will be the people that are still struggling, still just grinding, still living in fear about how much they own and make. And I feel for those people because that rug is being pulled out from under us right now. I mean, so many people, I still live in the Newport Beach area, that, you know, based their reality on how much they had, and the financial rug was pulled out from under them. And it's amazing how quickly people can adapt and go, I'm happy with less. And
right.
I really believe that we are being forced to say, I'm happy with less. And it's so much healthier for us to approach life from that place, not worrying about how much we can show off to other people.
Oh, amen. And it comes down to simplifying. You know, it comes down to priorities and values and your own, you know, moral compass within your soul. Because it's a matter of, okay, you know, we lived through the 80s and the 90s where it was an accumulation period of, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. And then, you know, we started to come into the 21st century with a little bit of, you know, confusion. And now we are here where literally everything that has been built up over the last 30 years of a real, you know, capitalism and commercialism, you know, we're now really prioritizing. And what's the priority? It's our truth. It's our heart. It's our authenticity. It's of service to one another. It's of unconditional love. It's compassion. Those are the things that can't be bought. Those are the things that all of us have the capacity to hold and give and show. And that's really where, you know, put your money where your mouth is. So
yeah.
it's you know, we really have a reorganization of our priorities right now, and it's really important. Even though you see these presumed so-called spiritual folks who gather up people who, you know, for workshops and enlightening experiences and charge $10,000 a head. You know, I mean, you know, excuse me, but does this jive with you? You know, I mean, it's a spiritual experience, and I understand everyone deserves to get paid. Everyone deserves to, you know, have a fee. But the exorbitance and the elitism that has been created out of a spiritual or presumed spirituality is disgusting to me. Go ahead.
Oh, I did want to touch on it real quick because that was a point that I wanted to go back to. What you're talking about is happening is people are becoming aware, those spiritual, without even having to name names, but I've got a dozen people that come right up into my consciousness of the type of person you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And they became aware, they awakened, they got the message, they realized it was powerful, but they drug old paradigm energy into it. And mm-hmm. maybe that's just the transitional. They drug the ego, the money, the fear, the I got to have enough, I got to be recognized, I have to be famous for this, I have to have my name attached to it. I have seen so much of this. And the irony, of course, is they talk about this, here we go, we're going from a place of ego to we go, and you can only learn about it through my, you know, copyrighted book and tape series and everything else. And
yeah.
I just like, are you not even hearing this? But what it is, you have to forgive it, is that they're just bringing old energy, the way things did work, into this newness. So, you
right.
know, that's the transition phase. That's the sloppy, messy, and I think the whole world is going through a macro vision of that same thing. It's sloppy. This shift, if anything, I think, is not going to be, wow, we went from this gray, you know, the blinders over our eyes to suddenly one day our eyes were opened and we all joined hands and sang kumbaya together. It's going to be a messy, sloppy transition
yep.
into it, but it's happening. And I'll tell you, social networking is playing a huge part in it. All these things, it's amazing to me that you draw a little window 5 years around this 2012 date, go, you know, 5 years before it, or maybe 10 and 10 years after. I think that 1,000 years in the future, they will look back and go, wow, it really was when people could connect instantly all around the world that this change really did happen, much in the way that the really ancient people living on this planet said it might. It's
right.
It's fascinating.
And it's also almost, you know, I'm a history buff and I love history, and I do believe that if we don't wake up, history repeats itself. And for me, it really is indicative in a lot of ways. I wouldn't say exactly, but similar to the Dark Ages and the Renaissance period, because it's almost like we're having to come out of a real dark side of, you know, a lack of understanding into really our hearts and our souls of self-expression. And, you know, I see that as kind of the breaking of the paradigm, like you were saying. But there's this whole piece of, you know, people who are on the path. You know, I know several people, many people, who travel around the world going from site to site to site, or workshop to workshop to workshop, or, you know, guru to guru to guru, or master to master to master, and they're coming back, oh, I'm so enlightened and feeling so, but then they start to lose that high and they have to go off again, jet setting across to Peru to go climb the peaks. You know, that's what I love about your book, is that it resonates on a really, you know, fun level, that you don't have to leave your house, you know.
You don't have to leave anywhere. Everything, your temple is modular, mobile with you.
Yes. Amen. Amen. I mean, that's what I loved about it, is like, you know, here you don't have to go anywhere. You just have to trust your heart. That's all you have
to
do, is just go within. Go within. And it's just, you know, it's such a great, great read, great enlightening. It takes you back. It puts you in touch with nature. It makes you realize what your purpose is, or if your purpose needs a little tweaking. You know, it was a really delightful read. It was just perfect for where I was at. And like I said, there are no coincidences. And I walk my life, you know, I really try to, you know, kick myself when I'm not trusting myself, but I try to walk my life in listening to God and listening to that inner voice and trusting my intuition. And had I not, I never would have encountered this miraculous birth that was before me. And you were saying before, they do have midwifery, which is what I encountered. They were, as she was giving birth, there was another dolphin swimming right next to her. And then when she did a big swoop after, like, she shook this dolphin, this baby dolphin from her tail. She, like, shook it. And then they disappeared for a few seconds and came back up. And as they came up, this dolphin was suckling to the mother, and another dolphin was guiding next to them. So it was just, you know, and I when I locked eyes with her and I realized what was going on, I'm thinking to myself, does she know I'm the mother of four children?
Yeah, I would think yes. I would think she would know that you're a mother. I would think there's so much to think of it. To think of an intelligent creature that has seen human beings right away would recognize, oh, there's a woman. I know what women look like. I've seen women in the water. There's a female of their species. She's looking at me going through this birth process, maybe because there's empathy towards me. She's lived through this experience. I mean, you can't underestimate what an intelligent creature could be also from their side. It could have been special for her. That, like, and on top of my birth experience with all these dolphins around me in love, a human was watching me and sharing the experience. I mean, you know, who knows? It seems highly likely to me.
Well, that takes it to a whole nother realm that I, you know, it definitely changed me. It really brought me even deeper into, you know, my heart. So I'm still going through it. You know, it literally changed me in the month of May through the whole month of June. I'm now in July, and I, even just talking about it, I still get, you know, goosebumps and vibrations from talking about it. So I just find it so timely to have you on the show, and God bless you. Thank you so much for being on. Let's direct our listeners to you and to the book now, because we have about 2 minutes left of the show. Where can our listeners find you? Do you have a website you want to provide?
I do have a website that has lots of great information. I think people would enjoy it. It's called theaquarianage.com. So theaquarianage.com.
Okay.
They can go to my book is now the second highest rated science fiction title on Amazon,
wow.
Which just happened about a week ago. So that's a really cool thing. You can go and read reviews, even if you don't buy it right away. You can go to Amazon, look up The Aquarians, and read some of the reviews there. A lot of people have said so many of the things that you said, right down to comparing it to the Celestine Prophecy and things like that. Such a joy and privilege for me to connect with people like you and just affirm that this shift that we're talking about is so real, because you and I just exposed it. We connected in that way, shared that space, shared those ideas,
right.
And obviously hopefully connected with others. I mean, it is just happening. And
right.
I feel so just energized by the whole experience. I love talking with you today.
I have too. This has been a really blessed show. It's no coincidence that you're the only live show I'm doing all summer. No coincidence that it's about dolphin and my experience happened prior to even reading your book. I mean, I was thinking when I saw The Aquarians 2012 that it was a book about the Mayan calendar, never giving credence to looking at the front cover of the book or giving credence to the fact that it was dolphin. So, I mean, it was, you know, definitely, I've got a little bit of a brick being hit at my head, you know, so I'm listening.
Listening,
I'm
good.
Open.
Me too, and so, I'm trying to keep my antennas open.
Oh, thank you so much, Eric, and again, the book is The Aquarians. The book is The Aquarians, 2012, A New Era Begins by Eric Rankin. Eric, thank you again so much for being on here. I look forward to talking to you again. And thank you so much for providing our listeners with such incredible insight and wisdom. God bless you on your journey, and I look forward to connecting with you.
Right back at you. Me too. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great day, Eric.
You too.
Bye-bye.
That was great.